I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. This is Fronteras, a program about issues along the U.S.-Mexico border and changing demographics in the Southwest. Displacement is a common theme when it comes to development and gentrification. Sometimes it comes in the form of being taxed out of your home because the property taxes become unaffordable, or maybe your home is in a demolition zone. This is the case for a small El Paso neighborhood adjacent to the U.S.-Mexico border.
When we look to our past civilizations, all we see are buildings. We see the remnants of who those people are, and there's so much to learn. If we were to destroy such a historic monument and a historic street full of community and full of culture, the only thing that's going to be built over it is a 2x4, 2.0 system, 21st century desperation towards Western civilization and towards colonialism. This is not the culture our community embodies, and that is why I'm here.
That's the voice of Sarah Glenn, a protester chained to a building in the El Paso barrio of Duranguito. Duranguito is one of El Paso's oldest neighborhoods. Its roots date back to 1827. And like many old minority neighborhoods, it's also poor, with its residents living in homes or housing in dire need of repair. But like many old minority neighborhoods, its residents take pride in where they live. It's not much, but it's home. And it's been home for generations. But developers have had eyes on Duranguito and other South El Paso properties as part of a long-term downtown revitalization plan. Yolanda Chavez Leyva is an associate professor in the Department of History at the University of Texas at El Paso. Her specialty is history of the border, and she's played an active role in saving the neighborhood of Duranguito. Leyva says the lives of Duranguito residents began to be upended in 2012.
In 2012, a very small number of voters voted for a quality of life bond. And in that quality of life bond were included things like improvements to the library, a children's museum, and then what they called a multi-purpose entertainment center. All of this was grouped together in one proposition. So if you wanted a children's museum, you would end up voting for everything. And that's a very specific strategy taught to cities to bundle things together, hide the fact that you really want to build an arena. How can cities do this? So you bundle everything together so people might like one out of the four projects and they're going to vote for it, and it ends up that you vote for all of them. So in 2012, a small group of voters voted. We have very low voter turnout. So that's 2012. In October of 2016, on a Thursday, the city released the news that they were going to vote 5 days later whether to demolish Duranguito or not and place a sports arena there. Duranguito is the oldest neighborhood in El Paso. It is archaeologically significant. Duranguito is a neighborhood that is 95% renters. It is majority older women. The average income is $10,000 a year. The average rent is $350. And the people who live in that neighborhood, for the most part, have lived there for decades. It's a very close-knit community. On that Thursday in October of 2016, how the people who actually live in the neighborhood found out that their neighborhood might be demolished was on the news. Members of the Paso del Norte group began buying property in that neighborhood starting in 2003, when the plan was already developed. Not public yet, but developed. So they began to buy property, knowing that eventually the city would buy it and demolish it, because you can see it in that map that Duranguito is slated as the location for an arena. So several things happened over the course of that first year. One thing that happened is that two or three residents of the oldest tenement in Duranguito, building that was not part of the demolition but right across the street, spoke to the media about their desire to stay in their homes and their desire for the landlord to fix their homes. You know, the property owners have consciously neglected the buildings, knowing that their ultimate plan is to sell them to the city. So this was November of 2016 that the residents spoke to the media. In December, the very same residents who had spoken to the media received eviction notices. And the eviction notices said for non-payment of rent. But we had the receipts where they had always paid their rent. So we took them to Texas Rio Grande Legal Aid for assistance. And the attorneys with legal aid went to court. And the judge ruled in favor of the residents and told the property owner, you have to make all these repairs in the building. And he didn't. What happened is he allowed the building to be condemned. The people were evicted. Because of the involvement of legal aid, the city understood that it had to follow federal law, which meant that they had to offer money to the people that they were asking to leave their apartments. So it was around $10,000, which you can imagine if you're living on $10,000 a year, $10,000 is a lot of money. So right now on this one street, Chihuahua Street, there are two women left. One is a homeowner. The other person who is staying is really a neighborhood leader since the 90s, and she's 90 years old, and she's a very strong advocate for her community. The other part of Barrio Duranguito that was very affected was a business where people could have small stands and sell goods. So about 50 small business people were displaced, as well as the residents. And they too were very often retired people who were trying to subsidize their Social Security.
So where do these people go? Because these are neighborhoods they've known all their life. And so all of a sudden they're given $10,000 to go find somewhere else to go. If your whole life has been in those neighborhoods, where do you go? Where did these displaced residents end up?
Some people moved to Juarez because they couldn't afford anything in El Paso anymore. Some people moved to the more rural parts of El Paso, way east of El Paso. And you know, that movement to rural parts is something that has happened in Texas cities facing gentrification for years now, where people are displaced from what used to be the very unwanted inner city. They're displaced once gentrification begins and people with money want to live close to downtown. Very often they end up being pushed out to rural areas where there's no transportation, where it's very difficult to get to services. Meanwhile, the property owners who eventually did sell their property to the city received three times the appraised value of the vacant lot plus relocation expenses. In the summer of 2017, the city approved demolition permits for the historic buildings on Duranguito. Back in the 90s, the city had commissioned an archaeological study of that neighborhood. And what the archaeologist said in that study was that it was a very significant place archaeologically. So they think that you'll be able to find not only remnants of an 1820s land grant ranch there, you will find remnants of the Confederate Army there, and you will find indigenous artifacts going back thousands of years. And they recommended many historical markers. They recommended the buildings to be nominated for national historic designation, and the city just put that on the shelf, didn't share it with people. In that neighborhood is the oldest house in El Paso. In that neighborhood, and this is the only building with a historical marker, is what is called the Villa Stash House, where Pancho Villa used to stash or hide jewelry, arms and ammunition, money. That's there. We have buildings going back to the 1880s that are not only significant architecturally, they're incredible, but also tied to all the founding families of modern El Paso. In September of last year, through the legal proceedings that are going on trying to save the neighborhood, Dr. Max Grossman, who is a professor at UTEP and a historic preservationist, has a legal team that asked for a cease and desist order against demolition once we found out that the city had already approved the demolition permits. And on September 11th, we were awarded these orders to stop any demolition.
Where did the orders come from?
They came from three appellate court judges in El Paso. At the same time that they were being issued, on the evening of the 11th, the bulldozer showed up. And people were already there because we were having a press conference to talk about these orders to help protect the neighborhood. So people literally stood in front of the bulldozers to stop them. And eventually the bulldozers left. So we had this order from the court: you cannot demolish. You cannot demolish. The next morning at 7 in the morning, the bulldozer showed up again and began to demolish the neighborhood. So the residents were there trying to stop it. I arrived about 7:25, 7:30, and they had already taken out the corners of several buildings. So they were not demolishing buildings in the way that you demolish a building. They hadn't prepared the neighborhood. There's things you have to do. You have to, you know, secure the building. You have to fence it. You have to make sure no one is around. What they did is they took these small bobcats and they destroyed the corners of the buildings, maybe hoping the buildings would fall over themselves, maybe trying to damage them so much that people would say, well, now we have to demolish them. But what they didn't expect is that these 1880 buildings are incredibly well made. So September 12th, the Bobcat is taking out the corners of buildings. We call for people to come protect the neighborhood. A couple of hundred people show up. For the whole day, the supporters of Duranguito were there. In the afternoon, the police actually ended up fencing us in with the partially demolished buildings. And we didn't want to leave because we had already seen that this demolition had occurred, even though there was an order to stop any demolition. So we weren't going to leave the buildings. We were in the sun. Most of us were on our way to work, so we were not, you know, dressed to be standing in the streets all day. People brought us food, and eventually they allowed us to have food and water, but that was after many hours of just being there. And we were there all day trying to stop the demolition of these buildings. So from September 12th till now, we have people there 24 hours a day watching the buildings, making sure that nothing happens to hurt the buildings.
We're speaking about barrio displacement with Yolanda Chavez Leyva, an associate professor of history at the University of Texas at El Paso. When we come back,
it's a global struggle against gentrification now, where the most vulnerable people are pushed out of their neighborhoods where they may have been for generations.
More with Yolanda Chavez Leyva next on Fronteras. Welcome back to Fronteras. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio.
This is Chicano. This is Chicano history, and they want to get rid of it. They want to demolish it and raise it to the ground and erase it completely. And not only are we not going to stand for that, but that's against the law. There are court orders that have said you cannot do this right now.
The South El Paso barrio of Duranguito has been in the crosshairs of bulldozers since 2017. The neighborhood was considered desirable by developers for a voter-approved multi-purpose entertainment arena that was later discovered to be a sports arena. The few residents who are left and community supporters haven't just been standing in front of bulldozers 24 hours a day. They've been taking their case to the courts to drive the demolition crews away. Historian Yolanda Chavez Leyva has been on the front lines of the legal battle.
So what the city did in the summer of last year was they asked for a court to give a judgment saying, yes, they could demolish the neighborhood. Yes, they could build the multi-purpose entertainment center that is really an arena. They asked a court to do that last summer, and they took it to Travis County. So the legal team of Dr. Grossman was there arguing that the bond language never said arena. Texas Rio Grande Legal Aid was there representing the residents, saying the language never said arena. In the end, what the judge in Austin said was, you cannot build a sports arena there. She agreed that it was never the intention of voters to vote for a sports arena.
And it basically just came down to an issue of semantics, a word on the ballot.
It did. It came down to basically the city misrepresented their true intentions, and she said, you can't do that. You never said sports till after the election. And the city appealed it. So there's a lot of legal stuff going on still.
And also, I have to say, though, I mean, there are a lot of people whose ancestors, you know, generations, their abuelitas, their bisabuelos who lived in those neighborhoods, they might not live there now, but they still have a connection. And maybe they weren't even aware of all this that was going on. So I'm sure this is something that you've seen. It's not until people start to protest, people start to demand attention, that something actually gets done. Because, again, through social media, through the stories that we've seen in Texas Monthly and the Texas Observer, more and more attention is being drawn to this small little neighborhood. So at least that's to an advantage to the people who are trying to save that neighborhood. But there are countless others who don't have that attention. And so even though this particular project is still, again, sort of stuck in limbo, there's still a lot of uncertainty around it. What have you seen as usually the outcome for these other neighborhoods who are trying to fight gentrification and development? Do they almost always end up on the losing side?
Well, very often that happens, but there are successes. You have situations like in San Antonio, where the Esperanza Peace and Justice Center and the Westside Preservation Alliance have made huge efforts to save buildings on the west side, buildings that are very important, not just to the history of Mexican Americans and Tejanos, but to the history of San Antonio. And sometimes it's a terrible loss, like in 2002 with the demolition of La Gloria, which was such a beloved place. But then they're able to save other places. The struggle is going on everywhere, everywhere. And it's not even just the United States. It's a global struggle against gentrification now, where the most vulnerable people are pushed out of their neighborhoods where they may have been for generations and are being replaced by people with high incomes. Their homes are being turned into, you know, very hip places to eat, to drink coffee, to buy things. And there's a growing movement against gentrification. So that Duranguito has received so much attention nationally from national publications, state publications. We've received a lot of social media coverage for what's happening. that is a good thing in a couple of ways, not just to tell the story of Duranguito, but to tell other people fighting for their communities, you know, keep doing it. You know, this history is worth saving. It's about the history, and more importantly, it's about the people that are living there.
We've been speaking with Yolanda Chavez Leyva, Associate Professor of History at the University of Texas at El Paso and Director of the University's Institute of Oral History. She specializes in border history. Supporters of Duranguito petitioned the El Paso City Council to allow voters to determine whether to place a historic designation on the neighborhood, which would eventually save the barrio from demolition. The Texas Supreme Court denied the motion in August to have that issue on the November ballot. Supporters are continuing to challenge the proposed arena through other legal means. Thanks for joining us this week on Fronteras. You can find the show under the Programs tab on our website, tpr.org, and wherever you get your podcasts. Fronteras is produced by Norma Martinez and Lauren Terrazas. Our executive producer is Dan Katz. Fernando Ortiz Jr. is our editor, and Vince Kong is our digital editor. Charanga Cakewalk composed our theme music. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio.